We are back with another episode of Healing Out. This time, it's episode 12, featuring MCW's Mikey J. But before we get to my conversation with Mikey, I want to talk about some ass. That's right, I said it. Ass. Today, I went and had chest x-rays, blood tests, all sorts of medical examinations done as a part of the permanent residency process. And I walked into this medical establishment, and immediately I saw a woman who had to be probably in her early to mid-20s with the most ridiculous backside I've ever seen. Now, I'm a married man. I'm 37 years old. Why would I be talking about a girl in her mid-20s? Well, the reason why I wanted to bring this up is because it struck me as incredibly odd. Because while this particular woman had quite the ginormous posterior, she had the skinniest legs I have seen in a long time, which made me think. Usually, a posterior is developed through either A, genetics, or B, through a lot of squats and some lunges, you know, exercises. But if you see someone, particularly a female, who doesn't really look like she goes to the gym much, as evidenced by her lack of quadricep and hamstring development, but she sports an enormous posterior, it just doesn't add up, does it? I'm going to go ahead and say it right now. I ran into somebody at the medical office today that had ass implants. It's the first time I've ever seen someone with an ass implant in person. And let me tell you, it was as ridiculous to see as it is to hear me talk about it. Ass implants. It's more about the total package, I would think. It's weird. How would you imagine what she looks like getting out of the shower? Just think about it. Now, if it was a natural gluteus maximus, you would imagine that her body would be in proportion and she would have somewhat comparable quadriceps and hamstrings. But in this case, I gotta stress, absolutely not. It looked like you could park a small car in between the gap in her thighs. Now, again, you could make the argument that I'm objectifying this woman. However, I would counter that argument by saying, I didn't tell you her name, I'm not giving you her social security number, and I've described nothing about this woman except for the lower half of her body. And I'm only bringing this up because it was so completely ridiculous that I thought it would be an interesting topic of conversation here for the introduction. I'm healing out on a random woman I saw while taking medical tests for my permanent residency here in the Commonwealth of Australia. I think Australia is a Commonwealth. Nonetheless, in other news, I read today that a UK promotion got themselves in a little bit of hot water for portraying an Islamic heel. How dare they? I think we live in an oversensitive time. Social media is great because it gives a lot of people a platform to communicate and exchange ideas. But the other problem with social media is that it gives everybody the ability to voice an opinion, whether or not that opinion is valid or based in any kind of fact whatsoever. Just because you have an opinion does not necessarily mean that it is relevant or worth sharing. I'm fully aware that I'm saying this on my own podcast. However, let's get back to this Islamic heel. I want to see footage of this event. If it's somebody reacting to the fact that a particular wrestler was, let's say, Middle Eastern, that's one thing. If it's a backlash to a performer going out there and making a mockery of one of the world's major religions, that's entirely a different thing. So I'm going to reserve judgment on this particular news item that I've stumbled upon today until I can see that footage. Now, maybe there's a conflict of interest. I mean, I did portray a Middle Eastern character for the majority of my career, but ladies and gentlemen, I'm Middle Eastern. It's me. Now, at various times in my career, at the behest of power players in the industry that I was working for, perhaps I towed that line a little bit. But I never overtly intended or portrayed a mockery of the Islamic faith. I myself, I'm not Muslim. I don't have a problem with Islam. But I think it's generally in bad taste to do something of the sort. So, if this individual in the UK went out there and threw out a prayer rug and started praying, I could see how people would be offended. If, however, this particular individual simply portrayed someone of Middle Eastern descent and a wrestling fan or person that happened to be at this particular show got offended, because how dare you represent a segment of the world population that may be, I don't know, giving us a headache right now because they're all trying to escape a horrible civil war in Syria where they're all dying and they're coming to the UK and they're stealing our jobs. That's probably more of an American line, but still, I could see that happening. I think it's an entirely different issue. So I brought this up because, you know, probably not going to get booked in the UK anytime soon now, if it is in fact just Islam or Middle Eastern phobia. But if it was somebody going out there and on purpose making a mockery of a world religion, that's an entirely different story. And in that case, I can then understand perhaps a little bit of disgust from a fan's perspective. But I will be the first to point out that if you're taking your morality lessons from the world of professional wrestling, then you, sir, are a buffoon. But on the other hand, I can understand if you bring your child to a wrestling show, you may not want to see them make a mockery of a world religion. That I understand. When I debuted for Ohio Valley Wrestling in 2006, I did so with a Middle Eastern-based character. My partner was Lebanese, I'm Iranian. So both of us, with full beards, looked like we crawled out of a cave in Afghanistan. The reason for this was because at the time, the United States was fighting a war in Afghanistan and in Iraq. So it led to a lot of professional opportunities for me to do so. Now, I'm a fan of opening and closing stories. So in my 10 years at Ohio Valley Wrestling, I wanted to close the story of that chapter of my life and my career in a way that paid homage to how I opened that chapter of my career. So I came in as an Islamic quote-unquote extremist, but realistically it was a Middle Eastern character that implied being Islamic. I closed that chapter in my career by doing a 180-degree turn and by portraying an evangelical born-again Christian. And let me tell you, it got some heat. Imagine you're in the deep South United States. And for those of you that have never been, it is a very religious, heavy segment of the population there. Without going into a tremendous amount of irrelevant details, the way that this change came about was after about a year and a half babyface run that I had at OVW, because I had been there for 8 years. So inevitably, when you put enough sweat equity in front of the same crowd, they will come to appreciate you as a person. So my babyface character suffered a bunch of concussions over the course of 6 months. We did some vignettes where I was abusing drugs and drinking and feeling sorry for myself, so on and so forth. It just so happened also that at that time, we had a student at the school named Stuart Miles, who was a legitimate pastor, and he had been doing a heel pastor character. He had a group of religious extremists with him, and together they were called the Congregation. So who better than to come and knock on my door and offer to save me? Wrestling mirrors society. At that same house, I can't tell you how many Mormons over the course of the 8 years that I lived there came and knocked on my door. They knocked on my door a lot because Mike Mondo would actually let them in the house and talk to them for 2 hours. Thanks, Mondo. Nonetheless, once this reverend character was introduced to my down-on-his-luck, alcohol-abusing babyface character, whose career was over at the hands of numerous concussions, my character believed that he could be saved. And in being saved, he could also be healed of his afflictions. Does that sound familiar? Because that stuff still goes on in a lot of evangelical churches in the United States. Probably around the world too. I don't know. Nonetheless, that same character that I was portraying went on to become the OVW heavyweight champion. Another miracle. And then that character began to believe that he himself was the reincarnate of the Messiah. Now, I'm bringing this up in an introduction, and I'm talking about this because you would not believe the reaction that it got. I was very proud as a career heel of the fact that most of the OVW faithful would turn their back as soon as I walked out portraying this character. A lot of times I'd be carried out, by members of the congregation with my arms spread in crucifix position. I wore a ridiculous white robe. I was barefoot most of the time. You know, I did the whole thing. Why I bring this up now and why it's relevant to the news out of the United Kingdom today is that the ladies at the concession stand at OVW, boy, they were mad. And I don't mean like, boo, you're a heel mad. I mean, you're going to go to hell. You're making a mockery out of our religion. You have no right to do this. Those same women absolutely loved my Islamic, quote-unquote, gimmick 8 years previous. I open and I close stories. Now, I rightly pointed out to them at the time that you guys had no problem when I was portraying a character that some people would equivocate with another religion. But as soon as I'm doing it with your religion, now all of a sudden you have a problem and you don't want to give me nachos after the show. That's fine. Ladies and gentlemen, professional wrestling is an art form, and it is a form of storytelling. Again, if you take your morality from what you see on any avenue of television, it doesn't have to be professional wrestling, then you are a misguided individual. Now, even if you are a misguided individual, don't worry. There's hope for you. I say that confidently because, listen, you can go to WrestleMerch Printing and you can get your own custom-made I'm misguided merch printed up. It's no problem. The people at WrestleMerch Printing, they will give you prompt and courteous service, and they will give you a fair quote. WrestleMerch tees and hoodies are screen printed one by one to ensure precision and quality every time. They can also design artwork, as they did for Wrestle Radio Australia. They have in the past taken care of TMDK, Jimmy Havoc, Mr. Juicy, Jonah Rock, Damian Slater, The Bestos, Wrestle Rampage, Melbourne City Wrestling, EPW Perth, Hunter Valley Wrestling, and the list goes on and on. And ladies and gentlemen, add your name to that list. I may even get myself a shirt printed up that says I went to a summer camp pro wrestling show in the United Kingdom and I was thoroughly offended that somebody else was doing a Middle Eastern gimmick. God damn it, I'm trying to make a living here. I don't know if they're going to print that. It's worth a try. For further details and a quote, send a message to the WrestleMerch Printing Facebook page. You'll get a prompt reply, friendly service, and be sure to tell them that you heard all about this from me on Healing Out. Now, with that said, my conversation with Mikey J, a little bit over an hour. Mikey, I found, is a studious, very intelligent individual. I enjoyed having him over to my house to eat my kangaroo steaks. We had a good conversation, and I think it's a great glimpse into the mind of someone who is a wrestling promoter and who does it well. And I think his product speaks for itself. So with that said, go ahead, turn the volume up, and let's get into the head of one Mikey J. It's a sunny Friday afternoon here on Eva Court, Seabrook. I'm in my jungle-like backyard, and I'm joined with the one and the only Mikey J.
Thank you very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Not a problem, brother. Not a problem. Mikey, you wear a lot of hats. You are a production connoisseur. You are the cameraman.
Yes.
For Melbourne City Wrestling. You're one half of the owners.
Yes, it's something that I've sort of never really mentioned much.
The birds like that, you hear that.
The birds are popping huge for it. I am one of the founders of Melbourne City Wrestling. Yes, which is something that I reckon maybe only 10 to 20% of our fan base know about. It's something that, you know, I try not to mention it too much, partially because a lot of the time I'm fairly introverted on social media and otherwise people will track me down and start pitching booking ideas, which,
of course,
do it on my Twitter or something like that. I'm happy to engage every now and then, just in 140 characters or less.
Is Facebook like the real you, or is it kind of like half and half?
If we're being honest.
Well, yeah.
We are
in my backyard.
Yeah, I know. Welcome me into your home. We're going to be honest about it. It's one of those things where I reckon a lot of people on social media, you're only ever really giving out what you want people to know about you.
Very
like,
true.
Like, how good's my life? Yeah, awesome, you know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it is the real me, but at the same time, like, if I'm feeling sad one morning or something like that, it's not like I'm going to jump up and put it on social media. Just
you're not one of those people.
No. I don't need people to know what I like, how I'm feeling that morning or what I'm eating, unless it's something particularly good that I've made myself. Like, I was Snapchatting the creation of putting an entire Pop-Tart into a pancake on the weekend. So, you know. Like,
I feel you.
Yeah.
I feel you.
But it's one of those things where it is the real me, but it's sort of, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bare bones version, because let's face it, who cares? We're all wrapped up in our own lives anyway.
That's true. That's true. That's for sure. I find that it's a projection of one's ideal self.
It is, isn't it?
Yes.
Isn't it?
But a lot of times I'm surprised at how people will judge you on stuff. Like, once upon a time I had a sponsorship deal with a supplement company. And yeah. I used to have to shill their stuff all the time on my social media, and people would like get legitimately mad at me for it. And I'm like, man, I got a contract, bro. I'm just doing, why not use it for social media? Yeah. I mean, we use it to promote wrestling shows and to promote yourself as a brand. Well, and, you know,
that's the thing. Like, it's, you know, it is you as a, as an ideal brand, I suppose, that you're trying to pitch on social media, whether or not people sort of care to admit it or not. It just depends, you know, what do you want people to know about you? What do you want to get out there? All that sort of thing. And if you genuinely think people are going to care that much, then, you know, shoot, go for it.
So with that said, and the fact that we've got groundbreaking news here that you are in fact one half of the,
I'm sure more people probably know about it than what I realize, but I don't know. It's something that I never really go out of my way to promote, because it seems like any time anyone in independent wrestling is outed as being one of the owners, chances are they're probably on that show in some way, shape, or form. And yeah, like thus far, MCW, we've been gone since late 2010, and I've just been the camera guy at ringside. So, you know, if anyone... You know, Sid Parker threatened me on a show a few months ago, Sid being Sid. And someone's like, he's just the cameraman. How's he going to know? And it's like, excellent. Mission accomplished.
Perfect. Perfect. Well, it's refreshing to hear, man, because I have definitely worked for my fair share of companies where the owner is the top guy.
Mm.
On one hand, I can understand, because who can you rely on 100% besides yourself?
Yep.
But on the other hand, being as how this is a phony business, which is a work, at times I think it can rub people a little bit the wrong way.
It depends how you go about it. And like my line of thinking with that is, if there was genuinely enough of a groundswell where, hey, maybe he should be on in some capacity, then it would be something I'd look at. But until then... there are enough people stinking up independent wrestling that I don't need to add to that list.
Excellent. So you guys, you mentioned that it was founded, MCW was founded in 2010.
Yes.
Is that right? So you guys have been going for 6 years now.
Yep.
Let's talk about it. Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah, go for it.
What brought you into the crazy world of professional wrestling?
I was a fan from 1998. So, you know, Attitude Era kid.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have been, you know, 11 or 12 or something like that. Enjoyed it. If people ask me about it now, I like to say that it is like a stupid teenage phase that I never grew out of.
Fair enough.
And yeah, just sort of had an interest, was doing filming work here and there, because that was something I wanted to get into.
Outside of wrestling.
Yes, okay. Outside of wrestling. And an opportunity arose whereby in 2004, in July, I started working for PCW as a cameraman, which Steve, who many people know as Rowdy, he sort of brought me in as just a bit of a test. Let's see what he can do. And I'd seen one or two shows prior to that. The old All-Star Wrestling at Crown Casino, where a few of those guys are still going today. Crackerjack, Sebastian Walker was around back then in an in-ring capacity. Cremator was going then, a few others. Chris Fresh, who is now our main booker.
Oh, we're just giving away all the secrets.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Yeah, I said I'd call it like it is. So,
it's a healing out exclusive, ladies and gentlemen.
Like, it was something that I was keen to be involved with, even just from the capacity of, I get a good seat in the house, I get to practice shooting and doing all that sort of stuff. Let's see where it goes. So that was in 2004. By the end of 2007, 2008, like, I was doing filming, I was editing DVDs, all that sort of stuff. I was traveling all around Australia, so I'd, you know, some weekends I'd do a show in Canberra or Sydney on a Friday night, fly to Brisbane, shoot a show on Saturday night there, and then come home. And while I was going to film school, I'd be spending all my spare time editing and cutting classes, because I'd be jumping on a red eye flight that a promoter was sticking me on. So,
talk about being fucking over.
Yeah. Well, like I was doing pretty well with that. Like, for someone who wasn't working a real job, quote unquote, at the time, it was enough to sort of keep me happy and keep me going and keep me occupied. Melbourne's professional wrestling scene sort of... There were two main companies when I joined, PCW and PWA.
Mm-hmm.
PWA folded at the end of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
PCW folded the year after, so mid-late 2007, and took a hiatus until 2010. So, apologies, that's my phone going off.
How dare you?
Big deal in Japan.
How dare you?
So, there were all these sort of little shows and promotions that would start up, run a few shows, shut down, etc., etc. One of them was a show by the name of STF, which stood for Super Terrific Fighting.
Perfect.
Which ran in a warehouse. If you ask Crackerjack about it, he will tell you all about how we shook down the promoter for money a few days after with his mum in the car watching the promoter getting shaken down. It's fantastic.
Cracker's mom or the promoter's mom?
No, the promoter's mom.
Perfect.
Yeah. I had a hand in booking some of the matches on that show because, you know, he was a friend of mine. It was sort of, what do you want to see? And I thought, well, this will be good, whatever. It was run in, like, this dilapidated warehouse. It looked like a legitimate fight club.
Awesome.
In the middle of winter with single-digit temperatures.
Perfect.
There was maybe 50 or 60 people there. And at the time, it was like, wow, that is an awful attendance. But then there have been shows that have taken place in Melbourne with worse numbers than that since then, which is tragic to think about. So, in 2010, ACW, as it was then known, was running at the Thornbury Theatre in the basement downstairs.
Mm-hmm.
And ACW is a promotion that's been around since the end of Festival Hall and Mario Milano and all those sort of guys. The promoter there was in ill health. He needed new people to sort of help bring people into the business. So Tommy Hellfire was his go-to guy. Tommy was booking the shows there. I think he had some assistance. And they ran a few shows downstairs there. They were maybe getting, you know, 100, 150 people or something like that.
So it was an improvement.
It was an improvement on where wrestling in Melbourne was at the time, absolutely.
Okay.
But at the same time, the shows were sort of... they were sort of doing nothing. And because I was travelling all over the place, I would see people in different companies. Like, I saw Robbie Eagles up in Sydney for PWA, for example. You know, a lot of those guys who were really good who just weren't getting a run down here for whatever reason. And I said to Tommy, I was like, you can be doing so much more with this. Like, there are so many people who are just happy to exist in Melbourne.
Mm-hmm.
Why not try and do something more? And to his credit, like, he could have told me to just piss off.
Yeah.
He didn't. He let me book the next show, which was the first time that ACW was going to go from the basement of Thornbury up into the main ballroom where it is now.
So it's kind of a big stakes type situation.
It is.
In a way, yeah.
And he's then telling the promoter, hey, you know, we're going to bring in some people from interstate, so you're going to have to pay some travel costs on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a pretty bold and gutsy move considering there's no guarantee that it's going to work out.
Yeah.
So a couple of weeks before that show, the promoter dies.
Oh. I did not know it was going to take that turn.
No, yeah. So,
I'm on the edge of my seat literally now.
So, the thing is that then it means that it's sad that he's gone.
Yeah, of course.
But at the same time, we have a clean slate now to do something good with this.
Yeah.
The show happens as per normal. Like, we're talking, like, the card included Madison Eagles versus Shazza McKenzie, Ryan Eagles versus Matt Silver, who's now Buddy Murphy in WWE. And it was a really... like, I don't want to put myself over too much.
Why not? This is my podcast. Yeah, go ahead.
I thought it was a pretty solid show at the time, especially compared with what else was going on.
Uh-huh.
Looking at our shows now, the entire presentation doesn't hold a candle to what we're doing now.
Yeah.
But
I want to get to that in a minute, but go on.
Yeah, sweet. In fact, I'm pretty sure that event, which is Ballroom Brawl 2010, is on our YouTube.
Now.
Our on-demand page, yeah. So, you know, now that we've got the back catalogue, it's like, all right, well, we've got to put content up here somehow. So when we launched it, I put all the previous Ballroom Brawls up, and yeah, that was one of the ones that went up. So after that, I spoke to Tommy, and I said, look, if you're happy to have me on, I'd like to do more for the company. I'd, you know, like to get involved. I reckon you should change the name because ACW was typically sort of associated with the older, more rotund punch kick style of professional wrestling.
Yeah.
From people who were sort of just, you know, chucking on masks every now and then, all that sort of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. The idea was that we should have something local that people in this town could get behind, and we create a little bit more of a local identity and try and create a bit more of a groundswell movement, hence Melbourne City Wrestling.
Yeah.
So that was the name change, and yeah, we sort of just took it from there. So that's how MCW got started, as well as a quick intro on how I found myself to be in that spot.
So this is 2010.
Yes.
What kind of budget were you guys working with back then?
At that time, we were lucky in that we were essentially running paid shows. There wasn't any money left over, but our costs were covered.
Yeah. Because I'm asking that because I'm thinking, based on the story that you've told me so far,
yeah,
you don't have a full-time job.
No.
Tommy's an indie wrestler.
Yeah.
So from experience, I know he probably doesn't have a big budget to work with either.
I'd just started working in the TV industry maybe 6 months prior to making the approach to do more with ACW. Okay. So I was casual, but I'd be full-time within 6 months after that. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, like, I was still living with my parents, so there was a little bit of money squirreled away and all that sort of thing, so I didn't have to worry too much. Like, when we started, there was no real financial risk.
Yeah.
But in order to grow the company down the track, you know, that means that you've got to buy your own ring, you've got to get your own production gear and all that sort of thing. Like, there have been times where I'll put in money out of my own pocket in the hopes that eventually, over time, that will get repaid.
Yeah.
Which it has.
Good.
But yeah, so there was no real budget to speak of at the start. It was just cool. But we also weren't spending heaps.
I was about to say.
Yeah.
It sounds like you guys had a disciplined operation in that you weren't handing out money left and right.
It has been since the start.
Good.
Yeah.
So you guys own that ring?
Yes.
Okay.
And here's the other thing. That ring, the one that we have now, is the same one that was getting used at Festival Hall in, you know, the late 70s and early 80s and all that sort of thing.
Oh, wow, really? That ring's been around.
That has been around forever. And it had the steering wheels on it. It was owned by a company called Remy Mechanical, which, you know, anyone who's been around for a while in Australian wrestling will hear that and sort of have a bit of a chuckle. There was no apron on it. There was no give, to the point that I believe it was set up at one of the Armageddon conventions. And Sabu, of all people, said, "I'm not getting in that. That ring's got more give when it bounces up than when it goes down."
That's so, saying something,
right? Yeah. So, so that we bought that outright with the hopes that, well, at least we've got a ring that we can use, because we were originally using the platinum ring. And then for whatever reason, that was no longer an option. Mm-hmm. So we sort of thought, well, we need something in order to get by. We can get by with this until a better option comes along. And we've just sort of sunk, you know, X amount of dollars into it every year in with the intention of upgrading it and making it better. And from all accounts now, like, I haven't heard any complaints about it, certainly in the last 6 months, compared to when we first got it, when, you know, people were more than happy to just do submissions.
Yeah.
For a whole match.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
now you
exactly.
See why they punched and kicked.
And I mean, I'm not an in-ring guy, so, you know, it's not like I can pass judgment on people not wanting to, you know, do all that stuff, because
yeah.
I don't do it. I appreciate what everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, certainly, but I'm not gonna ask people to sacrifice themselves, much less so if the canvas that they have to work with is shit.
Yeah, it's a little stiff.
Yeah.
Makes sense. So I want to segue to, I'm going to fast forward 6 years, or maybe,
yeah,
I guess 5 years, to the first time I came to one of your shows.
Yes.
The visual presentation was phenomenal. I chalk that up to the fact that you work in the TV industry once we started talking.
Yeah.
Because now it all of a sudden made sense of why there's this independent company that has all these amazing video packages and presentation and so forth. But I see the look on your face. So go ahead.
That helped. I was doing entrance videos and all that sort of thing for companies way before MCW.
Mm-hmm.
It was something that I wanted to do. Like, and I think that just comes from watching the WWE product and watching what they're doing, and rather than going, fuck it, let's just set up a ring, keep the house lights on, we don't need a screen, they can all enter through a black curtain and all that sort of thing, I thought, well, you're not going to be able to compete with them on an even production field,
mm-hmm.
but there's no reason why you can't try to have a good, solid, independent version of what people might see on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, people don't want to show up, but, you know, to a high school gym and watch people performing under house lights and all that sort of thing. So
I've been on those shows before, man. It's very low energy.
No one wants to cheer when you can be seen, and all your friends can just see you, and it hides that veil of anonymity and all that sort of thing. So that was one of the reasons why I thought, well, we need to have a better setup.
Mm-hmm.
Which why over time we've added more and more to that. So like that's something that we always try and make sure we're staying ahead of the curve in terms of our production setup. And I do think that is one of the reasons why MCW stands out. You know, we've got a good social media presence. We do have all the good video packages, but that's also not me. That, you know, that comes down to guys like Paul Jones, who does all the audio and all that sort of thing. Steve Ward, who films the shows alongside with me, you know, the creative guys, all the production guys, the lighting guys, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a group effort. I'm sort of just the guy at the head of it who goes, yep, that looks good. I'm happy with that. Let's run with that.
Awesome. So the system that you guys have in place now, how long have these players been in their position? Like, it seems to me from the outside that it's a well-oiled machine.
Mm.
How long has it been that way, and was it always that way?
It is probably a bigger presentation. It's just sort of evolved in time as the company has evolved. Guys like Paul Jones have been involved from the audio production side of things pretty much since the start. Like, I knew who I wanted from working other shows and all that sort of thing as well. And Tommy will come to me with, you know, we should give this guy a try and all that sort of thing. Like Rob, who's doing our lighting aspect now, he has a bit of a background in that as well. Like, we're also very blessed and very lucky that a lot of people who have some kind of idea with the field that they're working with, they want to be a part of our show.
Yeah.
And they understand that, yes, it's an independent production. It's all a little bit shoestring. So they're, you know, there's that mutual understanding as opposed to getting huge production companies and blowing the entire budget on that.
Well, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Exactly. And that, you know, of course, that then means that over time, hopefully you can save up some dollars and continue trying new and different things, which will then grow your company in that regard. And you make sure that when you're making pitches to do bigger and better ideas, that what you have set up already as a foundation is not going to crumble underneath all that.
Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Let's transition. You guys have Ballroom Brawl coming up.
Yes.
It's one of your bigger shows of the year.
Yes.
Correct?
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
It's arguably the biggest. I don't know how or why that came about. I think it was just because when we were running the Ballroom Brawl shows at Thornbury, like in 2011, we ran four or five shows at Thornbury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was sort of the mainstay. And then those shows were supplemented at a place called the Dragonfly, which is a Chinese restaurant in Tullamarine.
Perfect.
Where people could sit there eating their chicken satays, watching other people bash the shit out of each other. Big deal in Japan. We had that going on, but as that's evolved and we've started running monthly shows in Essendon, that means that we can build up to, air quotes, bigger events at Thornbury.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine the costs at Essendon are less.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, the venue is, you know, like, less than a quarter of what you'd pay at Thornbury.
Yeah.
But it's something where we announced that we were doing Ballroom Brawl, and we moved maybe about 100 tickets pre-sale before we'd even announced anything. Like, nice. We just said, hey, we're running at Thornbury, and we sold all these tickets on it. So obviously the venue helps, the name helps. It's sort of just grown into something that's a big deal for us.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that comes in part due to some of the bigger matches and rivalries which we've ended at that show in past years.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that sort of added to the allure that, hey, this is, like, I always hate the term, this is their WrestleMania sort of thing.
Yeah.
Well,
you can say it's their Starcade if you'd like.
Yeah. This is their Bound for Glory. you know, it's one of those things. Like, it is one of the bigger flagship shows, which we understand now, which is why, you know, we go, well, shit, we've kind of got to pull out the stops, which is why, you know, this year we've got Elliot Sexton versus Jag, which is a big match between two guys who look the part.
Yes.
fighting over the heavyweight championship. Elliot Sexton, who won the belt at Thornbury Ballroom Brawl last year.
Yes.
He's held on to it for a year. Jag pinned him for the first time. It was the first time Elliot
Sexton... That's his loss, first loss.
That is the first time Elliot Sexton has lost a match since late 2013.
Okay.
So, Jag pinned him on our last show in a tag match.
No wonder his lats are so wide.
Yeah.
Go on.
In theory, that's a big match. That's a big rivalry. There's a lot on the stake there. Jag is pound for pound one of the best wrestlers in the country.
Yeah.
He's one of my personal favorites to
watch. I've never had a conversation with the guy, but I'm a big fan of his work.
Everything that he does oozes legitimacy and professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, when we're trying to come up with a big, you know, a big time feel main event for a big time show, it's a logical choice to have him in there. Beyond that, there's the feud between Dowie James and Adam Brooks, which ends in the TLC match.
And that's been cooking for about 6 months.
Oh, yeah. Since Brooks turned on Dowie at Thornbury late last year, our second of the two Thornbury events for the year. So, you know, that's been building up. And, those two guys, the last match they had was fantastic. They had a near half-hour match, and the audience was sort of on the edge of their seat. So adding in that element of tables, ladders and chairs, and, you know, knowing, as you would know, that Dowie doesn't do many gimmick matches or like doing too many gimmick matches, I think that's a real exciting element to have on the show as well.
Yeah.
You know, there's the Estate versus Juice XT, where if Juice XT wins, Sebastian Walker's gone from MCW.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the unsanctioned match between Sid Parker and Lockie Hendricks, you know, which is something...
Sid's been beating up a lot of the young guys, I've noticed.
Yeah. But it's one of those things where when that idea was laid out to us, we thought, this is a chance for these two young guys who have the everything to prove and nothing to lose. Go out and show us what you can do. You know, step up and be part of that next level of guys who are going to take over when, you know, your guys like, Elliot Sextons and Dowie Jameses and all that sort of thing either move on from wrestling or everyone gets signed to WWE or whatever else. You know, so those guys are there, in theory, to show us what they can do and prove that they'll be able to pick up the slack at some point down the line. And, yeah, it's... You know what I mean with that sort of thing.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Sid is a fan or a friend of mine, but I'm a big fan of his work. He is a ring general.
He's really good at what he does. When I first saw him painting himself up, I sort of thought, fuck, does this guy just think that he's a Finn Balor knockoff?
That's what I thought too.
Yeah. He's taken that and he's turned it into something that is his own character due to his love of dinosaurs or whatever's going on inside his head.
Makes sense. I love cats, but Teddy Hart already took that. So, go on.
And he's turned that into his own shtick.
Yeah.
Which makes it stand out more.
Mm-hmm.
And people look at him now and they go, wow, that guy brings something new to the table. I like that.
Yeah.
So kudos to him. Like he's come up with something that's turned him into more of a must-have talent on shows, which probably explains why he's getting booked out every weekend.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's done really well, and Lockie is fantastic. He's a great sympathetic babyface.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to work the crowd into a frenzy. He's really good at what he does, and he's just such a likable, goofy character as a person outside of wrestling, and that shines through in what he does in the ring.
Yeah. I would agree with you. Lockie came to my class about 3 weeks ago, and I had never seen his work, but immediately I knew he's a Carlo guy.
Yeah.
And immediately I understood, he is a Carlo guy, because all his stuff looked great, crisp, understood stuff. With a guy like that, it's more like adding salt to the steak, to the steak, as opposed to having to cook the steak. You know what I mean?
And that comes through, and that comes with the creative ideas, coming up with storylines that could benefit this person or push them out of their comfort zone a little bit. You know, that's how you sort of add the sizzle to what they're doing. And all of Carlo's guys are fantastic.
Yeah.
They're all, everyone who's come through, they've had enough time to figure out what they're going to be in a... if not a rough idea of what they're going to be as a character, like, they're able to come up with a fairly loose incarnation of where it could lead to.
That was my next question for you, is do you guys typically try to package these guys in what you see in them, or do they come to you with, this is what I'd like to do, or this is what I'm comfortable doing, and you guys work around that? Tell me about how you guys do that.
A bit of both.
Okay.
Carlo will tell us when guys are ready sometimes. Guys will come up to us and say, hey, we're keen to start taking bookings, and, you know, a lot of the time, if for me, like, we've got no shortage of people who we can put on shows. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of going, well, show us what you can do. Have you got any ideas? What would you like to do? Give us something to work with.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to be able to look at everyone and just go, you'll be this.
Yeah.
And this will work. So sometimes we try and leave that up to the guys in order to, you know, take a bit of the initiative. Because, you know...
If they're comfortable doing it,
yeah,
it's going to show through.
And opportunity is not always going to knock at the door. Sometimes you've actually got to go out and seek it yourself.
That I agree with.
So, yeah, like, we're happy to let people come to us in that regard sometimes as well. And yeah, more often than not, every time that we do it and we give the guys a shot, like, they hit a good home run. Like, Emmanuel's been fantastic. And he's... you've got to remember that he's only been on shows since... thank you, sir. He's only been on shows for like a year or 2 years or something like that. He's less than 2 years in on shows, and he's phenomenal. He's got a good look, he's got a good character, he's finding his comfort zone a lot more in terms of promos. Like, I remember the first or second time, you know, he'd walk out as a heel, and it was fine. It was nothing that was going to set the world on fire, but he dropped, I think he called someone a son of a bitch or something like that, and he apologized to me afterwards, and I said, don't apologize to me for it, because that's natural. Like, that's you being you, so that's what we want to see more of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that kid is super talented.
He is. He is. And he's only, like, he's 22, 23, and that's how good he is now.
Yeah.
You know, the equivalent of a Tyler Bate from the UK who we had over here in January, who's 18 or 19, and already he's fantastic. It's just one of those things where the character stuff and more of that sort of thing will come out in due course.
Help yourself, sir.
Oh, thank you.
The steaks are ready.
Excellent. I'm taking the little one. I had a big lunch, a big late lunch.
See, now, come on, dude. Season 2 is all about the barbecue, and you're totally raining on my parade here.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Just think about it. It means that you've got more for later.
That's true, because my fat ass needs to eat more. I know that for sure.
Hey, you and me both. I've got a wedding in November, so I've got to try and get in shape.
Let's talk about the wedding, because I just went through this last year.
Right, okay. Yeah.
So how much does your head hurt? And let me caveat that by me getting married was one of the best decisions I ever made. I was ready for it in my life.
Yep.
I love my wife.
Yes.
But God, weddings are a pain in the ass.
I'm very lucky that I have a wonderful, supportive fiancé,
mm-hmm,
who is more than happy to take the reins with most of this stuff.
Oh, yeah. My wife did 99.9% of the work for it.
And her only thing is saying, look, you're going to look like Conor McGregor on the wedding day in the suit and all that sort of thing. I'm going, yep, fucking perfect. I'm happy with that. Like, we sorted out a venue and all that sort of thing. So yeah, we're getting there in terms of the basics, and now it's time to just add everything else to it and make our lives needlessly complicated.
Perfect.
Can I have some steak sauce, please?
Absolutely.
Thank you very much.
There you go, sir. And here's some.
Ooh.
I don't want to say it because I'll say it wrong.
Worcestershire.
Yeah, yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah, close enough.
So how has the wedding planning, I guess, added to your workload? Because you're already wearing so many hats.
I don't want to say it's stressful, because I'm doing enough as it is, and the wedding stuff is only a small part of that. It's something that needs to be done. It's something that I'm looking forward to, so I don't view it as a burden or a stress. It's something that is there, needs to get done.
It's a labor of love, literally.
Exactly. It is. There are plenty of other things in my life that are stressing me out more than a wedding. Especially one where I don't have to do much of the planning. How diplomatic is that?
That's pretty good. You just got to look like Conor McGregor.
Exactly. Which means that I've got to start hitting the gym.
Fair enough.
A lot of sweatsuits in the sauna coming up.
All right. I feel you, man. I feel you. So we were talking about Ballroom Brawl.
Yes.
Tell me about, do you guys, all right, so when you're crafting, a good booker, this is me being the know-it-all, a good booker usually knows where they're going and works backwards from that.
Yes.
Is that how you guys approach your year?
Absolutely. I'm not going to give away too much.
Please don't.
We've got a shit.
We already gave away enough information.
Yeah, yeah. We've got plenty of stuff planned in advance. A lot of the time when people say, hey, anything here at all, and we'll just go, nope, sorry, we're booked up, because we know what we want to do, we know where we're going. In an ideal world, with barring injuries and all that sort of thing, we have a rough idea on where we want to be for Ballroom Brawl next year. And it's something where, you know, you look at crowd reactions along the way and all that sort of thing as well, and it's not a matter of us going, well, we're going to force, you know, like, we don't want to do the equivalent of forcing Roman Reigns down people's throats, for example, because that's something where you want to try and keep as much of your audiences from all their different sort of realms within wrestling fandom as possible. You know, like, you want to keep your guys who are watching indie stuff on torrents, because let's face it, they're not paying for it. you want to keep your families and all that sort of thing. Like, one of the biggest compliments I remember was when there was a message on the MCW fan page saying, my kids used to go around pretending to be John Cena and Randy Orton, and now they're running around pretending to be Elliot Sexton and Dowie James and that's Mr. Juicy and all that sort of thing. I was going, well, from a promoter standpoint, I mean, aside from please don't try this at home and hurt yourselves, you know, you got to throw that in there. It means you're doing something right.
Yeah.
It means your characters are working with a significant portion of the audience.
They're connecting.
Yeah, 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 exactly. They're connecting. And it's just a matter of making sure that they're connecting with everyone. Like, not everyone is going to cheer Elliot Sexton. But if 80% of the audience are, then that's good. You're doing the right thing.
My trainer, Rip Rogers, used to say it like this, and forgive my crude analogy.
No, go for it.
But a wrestling show is like a strip club. You go to the strip club, and you want to see a fat girl, you want to see a midget, you want to see, or I should say little person, you want to see the black girl, you want to see the Asian girl, you want to see the blonde, you want to see the brunette. It's a variety show. So would you say that you guys try to present your product, maybe let's not say like a strip show, but in that vein, that there's something for everybody?
Yes. It's that three ring circus. You need to have something for everyone. You need to have good technical wrestling. You need to have your hardcore wrestling every now and then. You need to have your cruiserweights, your heavyweights, because while one person in the crowd might like seeing people doing flips and flying around and all that sort of stuff, the person next to them might look at that and go, well, that's bullshit. I want to see two big guys just punching the fuck out of each other.
Makes sense.
I should have asked if we're allowed to swear on this podcast.
Fuck, dude.
Yeah, I'm very crass.
No, you're fine, dude. Luckily, Josh places zero restrictions on this, so we're good to go.
Juicy and I did Josh's podcast a little while ago, and we sort of just hijacked it completely. So I'm sure he'll be happy to hear this topic, like this discussion and all that sort of thing. Like, thank you, Josh. I apologize for the low ratings in advance.
Listen, if you want to start talking shit to Josh right now, that would help maybe the downloads. You know, they say controversy creates cash, and I'm sure Josh wouldn't mind. So, you know, help yourself, bro.
I don't have a bad word to say about him. He's fine.
Yeah, he's a nice guy.
Yeah, we used to do a podcast as well, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah, it's like Podcast Wars. And I go, well, no, it's not, because I don't listen to anyone else's podcasts, because they're all shit, and I'm not on them. So, that's that.
Hopefully you'll listen back to this one.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I'm not going to listen to myself. I don't want to hear myself talk.
Oh, come on now.
I genuinely hate the sound of my own voice. I'm happy to talk and give my opinion, but I don't want to hear it back.
Well, I'll listen to it for the two of us.
Thank you.
Dowie mentioned something
Two
weeks ago on the last conversation I had about one of the things that he thinks that MCW does to set itself apart is that they go after more of a mainstream fan base as opposed to just the hardcore wrestling fan.
Yes.
But I also, being at your shows, hear that hardcore wrestling fan base as well.
Yeah.
Talk about that. Marketing strategy. How did you guys walk that fine line to bring in more eyes to your product?
I think that comes down to how it's presented. your hardcores are probably going to follow people from show to show.
Mm-hmm.
And they work everywhere anyway. So that's not too much of a problem. Like, every now and then, like what we've just done with Jimmy Havoc, which was as much for catering for hardcores as it is about... There's sort of three aspects with booking a guy like Jimmy Havoc or someone else who's a name on the independents elsewhere. You're doing it to keep your hardcores happy.
Mm-hmm.
You're doing it to educate the rest of your audience as to what else is out there in the world, even though they've probably never heard of him, and he's not going to put asses in seats from that mainstream audience,
mm-hmm.
With all due respect. Because
he's not Hulk Hogan.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. You'll bring in your mainstream audience with that as well, and they'll see it and they'll go, this is pretty good, you know. Like, you're educating your crowd as to what is out there in professional wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So, a lot of the time when I've brought people from outside, from my real job, quote unquote, in, they will inevitably walk away being really impressed. I had a former chief of staff from where I work come down to a show in 2011 where we'd just been in operation for a year, and she walked away going, that was really professional. I did not expect that. And we've evolved and I think improved since then. There's a bunch of people from work who are going to be showing up to Thornbury as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is good. Like, you then hope that maybe that leads to other things here and there in the future. If work likes it, and given the industry that I'm involved with, hopefully that can lead on to bigger and better things down the track, even though, you know, I never want to hold my breath on that sort of thing, nor do I ever want to promote that, hey, this is a possibility, because it seems more often than not, which is something we were discussing off air, independent promoters who promise the world are just full of shit.
Yeah.
So one of the main things that Tommy has said is that we've got to sort of cater to that hipster Melbourne audience a little bit as well, which is a mainstream audience. And it's one of those things where you see people commenting on your events and going, oh, come on out, this will be great, it's a good laugh and all that sort of thing. And you go, it's not intended to be funny, but that means that we're catering to someone who is not potentially a wrestling fan.
Yes, that's how I see it.
Yeah. Which means that you're going, well, this is a unique night out. Like, Time Out magazine promoted us as being one of the top 10 destinations in Melbourne to take someone on a first date.
Really?
Yes.
That's pretty impressive.
Without word of a lie. Like, take them along to Thornbury. It's a heart-pumping exercise and all this sort of thing. And then you can console your loved one and hopefully slip one in later on, etc., etc.
That's an aphrodisiac.
Yeah. So, and I looked at that and I thought, that's awesome. That's good. You're catering to something that isn't a wrestling audience, and rather a going out and having a good night audience,
mm-hmm.
which also plays into the venues that we try and run. And, you know, Essendon, yes, it's, you know, a Ukrainian hall and all that sort of thing, but it's near public transport. There's a bar there. It's close to the city.
Mm-hmm.
It's in an inner part of town where people from that area will go for something different. Even just once to try it out, and hopefully they'll come back and bring friends back. Most of the time, when we've had people show up, they'll bring someone else along.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it got to the point where we ran an angle where Josh Shooter powerbombed Miami through a table, and Vice magazine were doing an article on, is this appropriate for, you know, men to be beating up women and all that sort of thing, and getting up on that moral soapbox because it must have been a slow news day or something.
Yeah.
And you look at that and you go, well, we're attracting mainstream publicity even in that realm. And any publicity is good publicity.
Yeah.
No matter what the content.
I like that Vice did that because they're usually reporting on, like, the Taliban and shit.
Yeah.
For you guys to get on their radar,
yeah.
I mean, that's kind of saying something in a way.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, they didn't ask us for comment or anything like that. You know, Kellyanne...
Oh, why would they?
Well, Kellyanne did a perfectly good job of representing and providing a good argument in terms of that anyway. But, I mean, you know, the fact that it's getting traction in that regard, it means that we're able to, I suppose, poke fun at some of those hot topic discussions and all that sort of thing and try and get publicity here and there. Like, I look at that sort of stuff as, if this is getting attention now, how can we top that next show?
Yeah.
Especially for someone who's a heel.
Mm-hmm.
to really do something to piss people off.
Yeah.
You know.
Forward thinking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And you look, and I mean, there was an incident recently where in the UK, some of those, the family seaside shows at the holiday parks, mm-hmm. there was some sort of Muslim character or something like that.
I just read this today.
Yeah, yeah, right. And you look
at it. I saw half my bookings going down the toilet.
Yeah. And you look at it and you just go, do these people know it's a work? But at the same time, you look at it and you go, all right, cool, we can have fun with this.
Well, we live in such a politically correct time.
Yes.
What's going on in the United States right now, especially on college campuses, is they are so... yes, please take the steak.
Done.
They are erring on the side of caution about offending anybody to the point where it becomes almost a masquerade of itself.
I hate that.
Some white floozy girl dresses up as an Indian, and now all of a sudden you're culturally appropriating Native American culture.
Someone dresses up as Kanye West, and all of a sudden you've set back international race relations 100 years.
Now, I can understand, maybe you can make an argument in the Deep South if they did blackface or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, I saw something the other day about when white people cook Mexican food, they're culturally appropriating. I mean, come on, dude. There's got to be a fine line.
When I'm cooking Mexican food, it's because I fucking love Mexican food. And so does my fiance. It's an appreciation
of their culture.
Yeah. I mean, we run Mexican wrestling shows, and most of those characters are awful stereotypes created by the promoter, who is a Latino.
Fair enough.
It's professional wrestling. It's not the UN.
That's true.
It's never going to be the most politically correct form of entertainment, and I don't believe that it should be.
No.
I think when you do that, you've taken the fun out of having what is inherently a good guy, bad guy storyline, soap opera, entertainment setup. If people are getting really offended about it, then go the fuck home and watch Q&A on ABC and just live tweet them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm curious to see how... I would love to see footage of this incident because how do I phrase this? Okay, so for the majority of my career, based on my ethnicity, I portrayed a certain type of character.
Sure.
It was always a stereotypical character from the region. It was never a Muslim character. But, wink, wink, the connotation is there. Does that make sense?
It's like the Muhammad Hassan thing. It's like, well, actually, 100%. He's really an Italian guy from New York City.
Yeah. You know? He's really not discriminated.
But we're still going to powerbomb him onto the concrete floor and kill him off.
Well, you can thank the USA Network and their heat for that.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's a very fine line there. Mm. You want to have things that are, I guess, contemporary topics. Mm-hmm. And that type of stuff, especially in the UK... is 100% a contemporary topic.
Mm-hmm.
You put a character out there, I'm not saying bust out the prayer mat and start, you know, praising Allah.
Yeah.
That's probably pushing it. But if you have a guy go out there dressed in some kind of Arabic traditional outfit, you are already kind of stoking people's inherent prejudices anyway.
It holds a mirror up to society, doesn't it?
It does.
It really does. And it's not... It doesn't necessarily have to be the bad guy, but people are going to boo it.
Exactly.
Especially because a lot of the time, and I mean, it is the same with us as well to an extent, away from the mainstream audience, independent wrestling and wrestling in general is sort of run in that sort of lower income, socio-economic areas, and it's not a knock on any of that.
That's the way it is. Yeah.
That's just how it is. That's your main audience. You're not going to get the tops from Turak coming down to watch an MCW show.
But at the same time, the people in the lower socioeconomic bracket aren't going to be buying tickets to the opera either.
No. It's a completely different audience.
Yeah.
And in saying that, you're not going to have anyone playing Muslim characters coming out in the opera, are you?
To my knowledge, no. But if so, I'd like to audition. Joking.
I would love to see something like that. I would love to see the amount of discussion and debate that would create.
I'll bet they sell tickets, or at least get a lot of press.
Oh, yeah. It's one of those things where you've got to hope that if something bad ever happens in professional wrestling, hope that it happens the night before a slow news day, so that you can capitalize on it the most, right?
Perfect.
Like, there was a the last time there was major mainstream media coverage for Australian wrestling was in 2002, where PCW ran an event called Carnage, and they had a death match.
Did that involve Mad Dog and Cracker Jack?
Mad Dog and Lobo.
Lobo, okay.
Yep. And they replaced the ropes with barbed wire. They had 40,000 thumbtacks rain down from the ceiling.
That sounds like Mad Dog, yeah.
And it was in front of a family audience. And perfect. Someone had called into 3AW Talkback Radio because they were morally disgusted by it, and it sort of snowballed from there, which, of course, it died down the next day, but the damage was done.
Yeah. Well, it kind of led to some problems for PCW.
Big time.
Yeah.
And I wasn't around then. I showed up just after the problems. Maybe that's how I managed to get in. I showed up at the right time. yeah, but huge deal. But I mean, it's one of those things where you look at it and they sort of backtracked from it. Oh yeah, no worries, we'll change it. But it begs the question, what if they looked at that and said, you thought that was something? Wait until you see what we're about to do next show.
Yeah.
How would that have worked in terms of changing your audience and bringing in, they had 800 people or something like that at that event. A lot of them are going to be there because they know they're about to witness a spectacle for the main event. So, you know, there's something to be said that there would have been a solid market to keep doing more of that, not necessarily for the longer term, but to sort of, you know, have that turn into an angle on the shows or get them a little bit more press, etc., etc.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think, if we were ever in the same spot, could we do something like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're never going to promote stuff that's intended to be really racially motivated or homophobic or anything like that, or
just straight up bad taste.
Yeah. We want to avoid that because, you know, that doesn't do anything for anyone. That's just cheap heat. Mm-hmm. It doesn't work in the long term. It probably hurts your product more than it should. And yeah, society's changed a lot in that regard. But when people sort of comment on an angle, like a girl got beaten up and it's a half played out angle, they don't know what the conclusion is that we're going to go for with it, which was Miami getting her revenge on Shooter at Thornbury by putting him through a table in return.
Go figure.
You know, it's one of those things. It's like, fuck it. They're probably not our crowd anyway.
Yeah. Switching gears from racially sensitive topics that you exploit.
I'm curious how you're going to segue this.
Just a clean break segue.
Okay.
I've noticed, I've been at a lot of your shows. Yeah, totally lazy. I've been at a lot of your shows this last year. I noticed that you guys feature a lot of young homegrown talents from around the area, and also some interstaters. Talk to me about how you get in contact with these performers. Do you guys go and actively look for these guys? Are you at a point now where they contact you for work?
Bit of both.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on.
We get people from Vicious Pursuit, like I was saying. You know, Carla will say, this guy's ready, try and come up with something for him. You know, we'll have the guys themselves come up. Hey, this is what I've been doing. I might have been down at training or something and have seen them there. Or, you know, they'll hit us up on Facebook, send a match, whatever. A lot of people do come to us, but we try and give the local guys a spot first. Just because...
Economically, or...?
Yeah. Well, you're not going to be able to fly them down all the time. And chances are, if they're local, that means that MCW is going to be their home promotion. Mm-hmm. If you're flying someone in from interstate, you know, for two or three shows in a row because you've got an angle that you want to run with them, chances are they're not going to be able to make one of them. Yeah. And it's a big ask to get someone to turn down bookings in their home state for what is probably their home promotion elsewhere to come down for your show.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Is it something that you guys actively seek to do? For instance, you want to feature, like, the young guys from, let's say, New South Wales, or I'm too ignorant to name other states, Queensland, whatever the case may be. Is it something that you try to pepper throughout your show, I guess is what I'm asking.
I want to feature the best. Mm-hmm. I want to feature the best people going, the best up-and-comers, the ones that you should be watching, because that is the stuff that gets you, in theory, longer-term attention and publicity. Especially when you look back at our shows, and we've run shows with four or five people who are now in WWE or signed to WWE. Whenever TMDK were in Australia from their Japan commitments, we'd be trying to make sure that we had them on our shows because they're the best.
Yeah. You knew they were going places.
Ray Charles could see that they'd be going places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we were lucky enough that we had Tennille in her last independent match before going to WWE. Matt Silver, who was our MCW champion and eventually got signed, so we had to take the belt off him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good situation to be in.
Yeah, for sure.
KC as well, all that sort of stuff. We want to feature the people who are the best, but we want to make sure that we're not just bringing in everyone from all over the place. We need to make sure that there are people who are going to be the foundation for every show,
mm-hmm.
and who you're going to be able to build up over time and claim as your own as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why, like, I think we've got a pretty good mix. And at times, like, people... It's one of the criticisms that people have of our shows every now and then. The people who are on them saying, hey, there's all these interstaters coming in. What's going on? Like, I might miss out on work. And it's like, well, prove to us why you should be on.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you want to create that healthy competition as well.
Well, I think that's absolutely necessary, because without it, complacency happens.
People get lazy, yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I'm on two sides of this story, because... as one of the boys myself, I know that sometimes your body hurts,
of course.
So on and so forth. But at the same time, speaking from a completely logical standpoint, maybe it's not a bad thing that you get a bit of a break.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
But I mean, chances are, if you're not booked on one show, then you're able to pick up a booking elsewhere.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things where we've found more recently as well, where a lot of our guys are being picked up elsewhere. And part of that's probably because they were homegrown MCW talents who were doing good things there, and other people want a part of that.
I think, to put it another way, you guys gave these guys platforms. They excelled on your platform,
yeah.
So others want that same same reason. I'll tell you 100%. I brought Dowie into OCW because of what I saw him doing on your show.
And rightly so. Like, they're all great. All the people who are getting opportunities elsewhere, they deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like we can begrudge them for it.
Yeah.
Like, that's a result of their doing as much as it might be us putting them in a situation where they can succeed.
So, you're the person to contact on Facebook for somebody from Interstate who has 25 matches and wants to work for you.
Oh, yeah. I think a lot of them already know that.
Perfect.
Yeah, just... If I don't answer your friend request, just send me a message first so I know who the fuck you are.
Did you know, this is completely unrelated, but kind of, did you know that Facebook does a filtered message request thing?
Yeah.
I just found this out and saw like 100 messages from people that I never even knew I had.
I don't use the Messenger app on my phone. Like, I've got such an old version of Facebook on my phone.
Old school.
Yeah, that it's Facebook and Messenger rolled up into one. So I found the filtered archived messages and whatever else on my desktop. And I looked through and a lot of it was just advertising and, you know...
a lot of spam.
Yeah, and Nigerian princes wanting to fund MCW through their genuine generous donations.
Was Power Udi one of those?
No.
Damn it. You would have taken him up on that one, huh?
I haven't seen any of his stuff. Like, people... I keep hearing about him everywhere.
Oh, he's,
but I've just
run, bro.
I've just ignored the whole sort of thing. But
Yourself a favor and try to YouTube him.
Is this one of those gimmicks where he paid the Bullet Club in Japan to come up with the Bullet Club Nigeria?
I don't know if it's one of those things or if he just did it.
Right.
Because that stuff happens all the time.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, it sure is. But I mean, if you live in Africa, let's pretend like you're a part of the Bullet Club.
Mm.
You're making a lot of money right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're booked all over the world. Your mainstay is Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to fly to Nigeria to confront Power Udi in a country that's been war-torn for 50 years?
James Song, Bob Strike Back style?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but probably not.
You know, it's like modern-day piracy, but, you know, if the waters are dangerous, am I really going to go after the pirates? Probably not.
Just like I'm sure Dowie's hitting everyone up now. Who's wearing a Superman shirt when they
There's
walk out
a lot
the
of them. There's a lot of them. A lot of those guys I've met too in my travels.
Oh dear.
That I see pop up on Dowie's Facebook page.
Right.
As
a rib.
Yes. I'll tell you this. Dowie is by far the best performer I've ever seen wearing that Superman shirt.
I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised.
So let's talk a little bit about preparation for these events.
Mm.
As the guy who's wearing the promoter hat,
yes.
What does your typical day look like on show day?
I'm lucky now in that we've been able to delegate jobs here and there. We have a dedicated production ring crew set up who are at the venue nice and early, and we've got a good rapport with our venues, so they're more than happy to give them the key. Like, I don't need to be there to let them in the morning, which is great. I'll wake up whenever on a Saturday morning.
Fair enough.
Like, not having a huge sleep in, because I'm probably going to wake up early anyway, because I'm ready for show day.
Yeah.
And I will do all the last minute prep stuff, you know, finish printing out door lists, things like that, bits and pieces, all that shitty little admin stuff that just needs to be done.
Mm-hmm.
Making sure that there's merch and all that sort of thing ready to go. I'll try and get to the venue anytime between midday and 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, some people might go, he's not even there from the beginning, blah, blah,
what
blah.
What an asshole. He's just cashing the checks.
Yeah, but I mean, all the work that I put in goes for weeks before that, you know, coming up with video clips, things like that, looking after stuff, having conference calls with the guys booking and all that sort of thing too. Like, it's a long process. It's not just show day.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally I'll do airport runs, which means that I'll be at the airport starting from whenever, you know, whenever people fly in. So, which is why I try not to fly people in too early a lot of the time.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Sometimes it's unavoidable. Apologies to Demi Bennett for Thornbury coming up. It's one of those things where, you know, you want to try and look after yourself as well. Otherwise, especially in that last hour before the show starts or the doors open, I am frazzled.
Yeah, I
bet. I'm running around doing all sorts of stuff, and it's one of those things where I'm trying to keep my cool, but people can sort of see through the cracks a little bit.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's just part and parcel with being in charge of it and being a perfectionist and wanting to make sure it all runs smoothly.
Well, it's your baby.
Yeah. And it's something that I'm working on improving as well. Like, Chris sort of said, hey, you need to improve your game day attitude and behavior a little bit. And that's something I've taken on board. And you know, just on that, like, Chris is someone who, when they say you've got enough people, friends in wrestling that you can count on one hand,
mm-hmm.
he's there.
Yeah,
he's pretty much number one. So I take his advice, not even just from a booking standpoint, but also in a lot of life lessons and all that sort of thing. Like, yeah, essentially,
he's not steered you wrong yet.
Not at all. Never, ever, ever.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something I've worked on improving. Which it helps having a bigger crew helping you out on game day as well. Because it means you're not there as long. You get to sort of be a little bit more relaxed when you get to the venue, and you know that a lot of the stuff that you might have been doing normally, if you didn't have all these helpers, is probably done, and you can just go, hey, can we change this, all that sort of thing, etc. Which helps. So then, you know, show happens, finishes, pay the boys as quick as we can, because who wants to sit around and wait heaps? Again, like, a lot of the ring crew work autonomously in terms of packing up. Like, it's the guys on MCW are really lucky in that we don't often ask for help setting up and packing up. If people want to help, that's fantastic, that's awesome, and that's something I still do from time to time as well, if need be, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, I'm not above setting up or packing up the ring. It's just that a lot of the time on show day I'm busy doing 100 other things. So yeah, it helps having people in that situation. That sounds like such a cop out, doesn't it?
It's a perfect excuse.
it's true, but it's still an excuse.
No, but I understand that completely.
Mm.
And it seems like you guys have a pretty good system worked out with the young guys breaking the ring down anyway.
Mm.
Let me ask you this. Do you get the same high as the performers do following a show?
A lot of the time,
you've got a lot
of
sweat equity in this, too.
A lot of the time, yeah. Like, I... sometimes, like, I'll call Chris or maybe Jay or someone like that on the way home, and we'll sort of debrief a little bit and have a bit of a chat and think about what went right, what went wrong, what worked really well, what needs to be improved, etc. I do get a high from it. Like, a lot of the time, if I'm carrying on like an idiot after the show, it's because we had a good night. I'm happy. I'll try and get out to wherever the post-show feed is happening, you know, even if it's just a McDonald's or something like that. The last show, we sort of decided, hey, I'll order 12, 15 pizzas.
Mm-hmm.
And if everyone helps pack up, MCW as a company will pay for them.
Nice.
There's the incentive. We can all hang around. And it means that the young guys helping out with the ring and all that sort of stuff, actually get to partake in that as well and not feel left out and just feel like they're part of the crew and, you know, and feel a little bit unloved in that regard.
Yeah.
As well. And that worked well. You know, we had a lot of the guys helping pack up, doing all that sort of thing as well and putting in, and literally as the last bit of staging was going into the truck, all these pizzas rocked up.
So pizza is the answer.
Pizza will solve all of our problems.
Perfect. My battery is going to die, so hopefully we don't get cut off here in a moment. Let's.
You got a power charger? I'm just getting started.
I don't. I mean, I do, but not out here. And it's the whole barbecue theme, bro.
This is your wind-up. This is your get the fuck out.
Like, I got an hour of content, bro. You can fuck off now.
People won't be listening to this, but anyway.
Let's talk a little bit about where you see MCW going in the future.
Wrestling has given me a lot in life. It has provided the opportunity for me to meet my now fiancée.
Mm.
It has provided me with an in to get into the industry that I wanted to get into from quite a young age, that being television. It gives me a chance to be passionate and really put into something that I enjoy. First watching as a fan, and even now, like, I'm of the belief if people go, everyone's a mark for the business in some way, shape or form.
You've got to be if you're going to go take bumps.
If you say you're not, sure. And you're sort of ridiculing the boys for being a mark in air quotes, go fuck yourself.
Because
we're all marks to some point. That's why we're doing it. So I'm passionate about it. Since wrestling has given me so many opportunities to do what I want to do, it would make sense for me, I want MCW to then be the representation of what wrestling should be in Australia. When people go, is there professional wrestling in Australia? I want the answer to be yes, and it's Melbourne City Wrestling.
Do you think wrestling is different in Australia?
I think that the best shows in Australia are pretty damn good and hold up on an independent wrestling scale worldwide.
Yeah, well, I agree with you that, but I mean, do you think the art form here is different?
I don't know.
Do you think... I'm sending Adam Brooks and JXT to Global Force this summer.
Yep.
There's a little exclusive, another one. And I would not be doing that if I didn't have full confidence that they're going to represent me well there. I don't think those guys are going to have an issue going on that show doing well.
I don't think it's that different. I just think that there isn't a spotlight on it as much as there should be, probably because people don't really know about it.
I would 100% agree. I didn't know that there was a scene here. I was moving here.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we've advertised in Fighting Spirit magazine, because that gets worldwide distribution. We did a Lucha Libre show for a sponsor in Singapore, and we went to one of the magazine shops there, and there was a Fighting Spirit magazine with our ad in it in Singapore. So we're looking at that and going, okay, cool. People know there's wrestling in Australia. It's one of those things where if more people know that there's wrestling here, the scene will grow.
Yeah.
And that goes for people who follow all manner of, you know, Lucha Libre, Japanese wrestling, whatever else. People who just want their fix. You'll get people watching that. You get more people from a mainstream audience watching it, which is how you grow and you get back to, air quotes again, the golden days of Festival Hall and all that sort of thing when Australian wrestling was on TV. And my goal and my vision for MCW is that I want it to be that Melbourne City Wrestling is at the forefront of that.
Got it.
And I still believe, like, I always hate saying personally that MCW is the best product. I want to believe it in my own mind, but I'm not going to say that because it just seems like a tosser thing to say.
Yeah.
But I want it to be that MCW is at the very least perceived as being the best in Australia.
Can I clarify what tosser means?
Yeah, sure.
As an American?
Yeah.
There was a term when I was growing up called tossing someone's salad. Is that what it's in reference to?
Yeah, similar. Okay. Like a wanker or... Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Right before my battery dies, so let's plug MCW's video on demand service.
Yes.
Because that's something I think that makes you guys stand out too.
Thank you. It's tinyurl.com/MCW Encore, or search for us on Vimeo, Melbourne City Wrestling. We're on Facebook, search Melbourne City Wrestling. We're on Instagram, M City Wrestling. Twitter, Melb City Wrestling. Feel free to follow me on all those sort of social media outlets like Twitter, which is, I think it's Mikey double underscore J, J-A-Y, M-I-K-E-Y, because a lot of people let a C in there. There's no C. It's not Mickey. I'm pretty sure it's something like that for Instagram as well. And, yeah, like, follow, let us know on Facebook what you think of, what you think of the product. You know, we can only improve by listening to our fan bases. Mm-hmm. Like, we have surveys every now and then, and the fans let us know what we're doing, whether or not we're doing anything horribly wrong. And I like that sort of feedback. Yeah. I do like that feedback. I just don't want to answer it at 3 o'clock on my own private profile.
Fair enough. Guys, the date is Saturday, April 30th. Thornberry Theatre, MCW, Ballroom Brawl.
And hit us up, melbournecitywrestling.com.au. It'll either be on the website, which is going to get changed very soon as well. And all the info, which is up to date, is on Facebook as well. So it's more than easy to track us down. Please do. And thank you to everyone who has supported us so far. And we hope there's a lot more of you and your friends in the future. Tell them about us, because we have a lot of great things in store that we want to bring out, but we can only do that with your support, and we're not going to do a Kickstarter campaign.
No, I'd stay away from that.
So it's, you know, it's all word of mouth, but really appreciate all the support so far, and we're just getting started.
I might do a Kickstarter campaign to buy a new grill.
Good idea.
Thanks for coming to the barbecue, man.
Appreciate it. Hope you had a good time. Thanks for having me.
I haven't hit stop yet.
G'day everybody, it's Todd Eastman here from the Big Ballers Podcast, and I'm joined by Golden State Warriors Draymond Green.
We world champions.
The Ballers and I every fortnight bring you news from the NBA, NBL and basketball around the world. Isn't that right, Draymond?
Yup.
We have segments like NBA Law and Order, Big Baller No Baller, and Question of the Day.
Yup.
Do you listen to other basketball podcasts?
No.
Why not?
They suck.
Well, you heard it from Draymond Green himself. Big Ballers Podcast, iTunes, Stitcher, and FNX Network.
Hey, I'm Will, the host of the podcast From the Sidelines, proud members of the FNX Network. I'm here to tell you why you should listen to our show. Do you need a comprehensive look over all the sporting happenings in the world on a weekly basis? Then you need From the Sidelines. Me and the guys discuss the bizarre, the serious, and the downright weird in sport every week. Seriously, 1 week we talked about jousting. It was so weird. If you love sport, you'll love our show. So come and join us as we look at sport from the sidelines.
Here's where the action is.
Wrestle Radio Australia.
Here's where the action is.
Three shows, one network.
Here's where the action is.
Healing Out with Muhammad Ali Vaez.
Just enjoy the ride with this particular long-haired Persian house husband.
Axe Cast with Josh the Axe Shooter.
Hey guys, make as much noise as you can.
Sleep, sleep.
You fucking say anything.
Out of here. You can edit this out, right?
Yeah.
And WRA with me, Josh Armour, and the wordsmith, Sean Fuster.
That was a crazy show, and I'm glad we survived it to come here.
Backstage, people are yelling out, "Oi, the show's bloody started." And I'm downstairs getting a photo shoot done. And I was like, "Oh, shit."
All of this is yours for free. Subscribe to Wrestle Radio Australia on iTunes or check us out on fnx.network. Wrestle Radio Australia, it's where the action is.
I'll bite my tongue and I won't...
Shoe the Defence is the opinionated, entertaining football show with serious debates you're looking for. We have a variety of guests from ex-footballers to journalists, members of parliament to athletes. Every month, former Chelsea, Swansea and Brighton striker Leon Knight weighs in with his opinions on night vision. So tune in on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, ShootTheDefence.com and the FNX Network, and let Stel, John, Mike and Stuffy give you a free football lesson. Follow us on Twitter at ShootTheDefence.